Good morning. My topic this morning is charity as a church. My name is Lee Wolfenden. This is Saturday, August 20th, 2005, the first lecture of the morning at the Freiburg New Church Assembly. So far this week, we've had many different wonderful lectures about charity, and I would say that the general focus has been on either the doctrinal concept of charity or on charity as individuals. Today I'd like to broaden the scope a little bit and talk about charity as a group. But I'm not going to get too broad. I'm not going to be talking about the church in the very broadest sense of the church of all believers, everyone of faith who looks to God in various ways, the large conception of the church. I'm not going to be talking about the New Jerusalem as a spiritual entity, but rather very specifically about the church as in the Swedenborgian church, the organizational church. The question that I'd like to address this morning, and I hope I'll have some of your help during the question and answer period, is should the Swedenborgian church as a denomination and should our individual congregations engage in charitable work as a church? Now, for some of you, this may seem like a silly question. Of course it should. But I grew up in an atmosphere in the Swedenborgian church, which many of you did, that had a general concept. I'm not sure if it was usually explicitly expressed, but it was certainly a part of the water in which I swam religiously, that the church's job was to deal with spiritual issues, to teach the doctrines of the church, to provide worship, to provide classes, Bible studies, that sort of thing. And then it was up to the individual to go out and express that in charitable action, in that person's job and in volunteer work, the normal stuff we call charity, and just being generally a charitable person. The church's job was to teach and inspire, and then the individual would go out and either individually or in other organizations set up specifically for that purpose would express the charity that was taught by the church. And there were some reasons behind this perspective. First of all, there was a very strong sense that the church must keep its focus on the spiritual because no other organization is going to do that. There are many organizations set up to provide public charity of various kinds. The church is uniquely in existence in order to bring the spiritual into our life here on earth, and it should keep its focus on that. So the church would do the spiritual part, and then there would be other organizations set up to take care of the more material charitable needs of humankind. And there was also a sense that charitable work and particular community involvement, and especially involvement in politics, would polarize the congregation and exclude people who love the teachings of the church but happen to have different views politically and socially about how we should act in the community and how we should act in our country. So there was a sense that if we get engaged in community action and particularly political action, this would exclude members of the congregation who don't believe the same way politically or socially that the group that's, shall we say, reigning in the church wants to follow. And so there was a desire to avoid mixing especially politics and the church to make sure that the church would be reaching as many people as possible who love the teachings of this church and find themselves spiritually fed and nurtured by them. So this was, I would say, the general atmosphere in which I grew up as far as the idea, the concept of should the church be involved in community service and should it be involved in political action. And I was perfectly content with that for many years, and it's really been only relatively recently in the last few years that I've begun to rethink some of those assumptions that I had grown up with. Now, perhaps this is just me dealing with my own issues and all of you have resolved it already, but I suspect that there are others here who consider this question and think about it and have thoughts of your own and perhaps would benefit a little bit by what I've mulled over in the last few years. And I will say that this is not going to be primarily a doctrinal lecture, although I will bring in some very specific concepts of our church, but more the result of my musings and ponderings and wrestlings with this issue and where I am right now with it. And I hope that my thoughts will be of some benefit to any of you who may want to think about the same issues or be thinking about the same issues. So I was satisfied for a long time with this church equals spiritual and individual equals charity distinction. The church would provide the spiritual background and foundation. The individual would go out and express that in his or her life, perhaps together with other organizations. But there are several considerations that have been changing my mind about that lately. And what I want to do is first just read through this little list that I have compiled. I have a little list and nothing, well, maybe a few things shall be missed. But anyway, I wanted to simply read through these things and then go back and talk a little bit more about perhaps each one, if I'm that organized. The first part, you know, being a theoretical kind of guy, I thought about the church's teachings. And there were several things that entered my mind, several aspects of our teachings that made me think maybe that neat little distinction that I had always lived with in the church is not really quite so neat after all, and perhaps not as in accord with the teachings of our church as I had thought. One of them is the very fascinating teaching of Swedenborg that the individual is the church in smallest form. He says that very clearly in a number of places. An individual is the church in smallest form. Another one, and remember I'm just listing them now and then we're going to go back and talk about them. The next one is the general teaching that the large is reflected in the small and the small is reflected in the large. This comes generally from the teaching that the divine is the same everywhere and it has created an image of itself in everything in creation. And that's true on the small scale and the large scale. And then the third, really a fundamental teaching of our church, perhaps the fundamental teaching in a way, is that there is a trinity of will, thought, and act in everything. That three, the love side, the truth side, and the action side is reflected in everything in the universe. And that if that is not there, a thing does not have full or real existence. So these were some of the teachings from the church that I began putting together in my mind and began shifting my views. Then there was also the practical matter of being the pastor of a congregation and thinking about the life of the church and noticing that when someone in the church organized a charitable action, a community service of one kind or another, people gathered around it and they were energized and they felt that they were doing something as a church. And I thought about our church's general mission to serve the neighbor and thought maybe we're not only supposed to serve that on the truth and the spiritual and the worship side, maybe we're supposed to serve the neighbor in practical ways as well. And then there's also the idea, the driving factor of church growth. Let's get practical. If you don't engage with the community, you're not going to engage with the community. And that means not only that you're not going to be out in the community, but the community is not going to be in your church. And so there's thoughts about how if we get out into the community and we're serving in the community, that there will be people who will discover our church who hadn't before. So these are all things that have been going together, and I'm sure I have missed a few things in my little list, and I'd like to go back and talk about a few of them more specifically. The first two of the doctrinal points that I brought up really blend together to form the thought in my mind, or the thought that is forming in my mind, those being that the individual is a church in smallest form, and that the large is reflected in the small, and vice versa. And I thought, now, we as individuals are supposed to be going out and expressing our beliefs in action. That's basic to our church's teaching. If you just believe it and you don't do anything about it, it's not real. And there's very clear teachings that we as individuals are meant to go out and express the teachings of the church and the love of the Lord in our lives. Now, if we are the church in smallest form, and the small is reflected in the large, and the large is reflected in the small, what does this say about the larger church? If we as individual churches, as church in smallest form, are meant to go out and serve the neighbor, doesn't that imply that the larger church is also to go out and serve the neighbor? There may be some flaws in that thinking, but it seems to make a little bit of sense to me. And then perhaps even more compellingly, the trinity of will and thought and act in everything, not just in us as individuals, but in larger groups and in the human race as a whole, we've tended as a church to be much stronger on the truth side. We've tended, not necessarily in all of the individuals in the church, but as a church, we've tended to emphasize the teachings of this church. And I believe there's some good reasons for that, because as far as I can see, those teachings really are the only thing that distinguish us as a church from other churches and that give us our special character. Maybe there are other ways we could be distinguished, but there is no other church that has our particular beliefs and teachings that it can offer to the world. And we've always felt that that is very precious, and for good reason, I believe, and that we should not lose that, that we should keep that as a strong focus of our church, because if we don't express and spread these teachings and teach them to one another, nobody else is going to. So we have tended to focus on that because we felt that is something very important that only our church is going to do. But there is still the teaching that we are supposed to be complete, that everything is supposed to be complete, not only in thought, where we've focused much of our attention as a church, but also in will, which has to do with our love, and also in act. And I began thinking, perhaps we should actually follow the teachings of our church, maybe, and balance our teaching with love for the neighbor as a church and with action that expresses those teachings in not just verbal ways, but also in the way of action. Now, I do recognize that words and teaching is a form of action, but it's not the fullest form of expressing the teachings. The fullest form is in the things that we do, in the way that we live. And perhaps the church should be doing that as well, to really be a full church. So those were some of the doctrinal considerations that have been floating around in my mind, shifting my views on the church's involvement in community action, in service to the community, in practical ways. And then I saw it in action in my church. We're blessed with a few wonderful people. I would say that most of them came from outside the church. It was the new blood coming in because the church had gotten into its pattern, and we had some newer people. And they felt that the church should be active, and they were willing to do something about it. And in particular, our Sunday school director, a very wonderful person who has gotten the children involved in various service projects with Heifer International, and most recently with a great organization locally that's beginning to expand called Supply Sacks. And the Supply Sacks organization provides for orphaned children backpacks full of basic needs that they would need, toiletries, school supplies, that sort of thing. These are primarily foster kids who have been taken from their families for one reason or another, either abuse or neglect or something like that, and they're being placed somewhere or attempted to be placed somewhere, and they often come with nothing. Sometimes the home situation is very difficult and they simply have to pull the children out and they have nothing. And the Supply Sacks gives them their own backpack and it has basic needs in them. And they have it for various ages and of course for boys and girls. And so our church decided under the leadership of Marie Morey, our Sunday school director, that we were going to do a few of these Supply Sacks and also collect funds to support that organization. And everybody loved it. It was a wonderful thing that we did. It brought the children together with the adults, and it caused our church to be doing something really practical that really made a difference in the lives of several children and of more by way of the contributions that we gave. And I saw a different spirit in the church as we went through some of these community service projects and felt our church is doing something for someone, doing something that is really going to make a difference in someone's life. So seeing it in actual action in my church began to confirm my sense that this is something that our church should be doing. And then thinking more about our general mission to serve the neighbor, maybe not only on the truth side, and that all added into it. And I also noticed that as we became a little more active in the community, we were perhaps a little more likely to bring a few new people into the church, and also perhaps a little more likely to keep some of the people who had come, but were feeling maybe there was something missing here, because I feel this church should be doing something. And so it added to the general life of the church. And all of these things, both the theoretical and the experience of it, have been moving me more and more toward feeling that it's a good thing for the church to be involved in community service, in doing good in practical, not only quote-unquote spiritual ways, for the people around us, for the people in our community, and the people in the world. Now, I do want to add a word on political action. I have gone quite a distance myself in my own evolution in thinking that this church probably should be involved in practical service toward the community. But I have to say that I'm still very leery of the church becoming involved in specifically political issues and in political action. And I have several reasons for that. One of them is that political action is far more polarizing generally in the church than community service. Who would have trouble with providing backpacks for foster children full of needs that they have? Not too many people are going to feel this is something that I just can't support. But when you get to political issues, we Swedenborgians, like others I suppose, tend to have strong feelings about our politics, about our candidates, about our local issues. And it's very common, in fact, probably the most common, to have people in the same church on the opposite sides of the same issue. And I think it's much more difficult to have the church acting as a whole, as a group, as a church, on issues that we are polarized about. And politics just seems to be a place where our way as a society is polarization. So I think there's a lot more danger of splitting the church apart if you get involved in the church involved in specifically political issues. Also, I do still believe, despite everything I've said, that the church should be primarily a spiritual power in the community and in the world. And it's very easy for the church to get sucked into being a material, a worldly power, rather than a spiritual power. And I think this was one of the things that happened in the first Christian church. Swedenborg traces most of the downfall of the Christian church, in fact, pretty much all of it, to doctrinal error based on the desire for money and power in individuals in the church. But it's very interesting that he pegs the real downfall of the church to the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. What was happening politically at that time? Politically at that time, Constantine was making the Christian church the official church of the Roman Empire. And he was decreeing that this is what people in this church are going to believe. This was precisely the time when the Christian church, from being downtrodden and sometimes persecuted and certainly a minority movement, was becoming the official religion of a worldly power, the greatest worldly power in that region at that time, the Roman Empire. And although Swedenborg traces the downfall to doctrinal issues, I don't think it's coincidental that the downfall precisely coincided with the time in which the church became a political power and began exercising worldly authority and not primarily spiritual authority. And I think it's a great danger for us still in turning the church toward political issues to lose our focus on being a spiritual power and not a worldly power. Because the church's goal is not primarily to better people's lives here on earth. That's a secondary purpose. Its primary purpose is to better people's eternal lives. And if we get too focused on the political which deals with life on this earth, we can easily lose our focus, our true focus, which is people's eternal lives. And then there's one that comes from my particular political views, so maybe I'll do a little polarizing here myself. Yeah. But as I look at the distinction between government and non-governmental agencies, there are a few distinctions. One of them is that government tends to cover a wider area. There are very few non-governmental agencies that cover anything like the size of the United States and have that full coverage. Everybody is under that umbrella. So that's one distinction. The government is bigger, which is why people often turn to it to try to get big things done. But another fundamental distinction between government and non-government is that the government can back up its actions with the police and with the military. In other words, the government can use force, and it's considered legitimate for the government to use force to apply its policies and actions and to enforce them. And I personally have real problems with the church becoming involved in an organization that can use force to back up its actions. That's bothersome to me. I believe the church should be involved in things that are voluntary and not that back up their actions with force. And then looking at the other side of that, there's the danger of the church becoming controlled by the government if we make too close a connection between the two of them, which happened and does happen in many countries. We know about in Soviet Russia the way the church there had to kowtow to the government in many areas to continue its actions, its work. And the church can lose its ability to have an independent voice and to speak out and act on many different issues. And in our country, I see a drifting in that direction with the closer connection that's being made between government and church, specifically with the various levels of charity that are recognized by the government as tax exempt, 501c3. Churches that become 501c3 are now under government regulation in at least part of their life. And where is that going to lead? So I have great concerns about this closer relationship between government and church. But let's leave that behind for the moment and turn back to the issues that have to do with the church being engaged in social action. And I just have a few more things to say before opening up the floor. One of the, I think, primary breaks on the church becoming engaged in community service and social action and that sort of thing is the fear that we will lose our spiritual focus. That if we start getting involved in community action and community service, we're going to become just another social service agency that has a historical connection with spiritual issues. And we could look around at some churches that have gone pretty heavily in this direction, and they've really lost their spiritual focus. And for us, I believe that would mean the end of our church as a new church, as a Swedenborgian church, as something specifically aimed at the New Jerusalem, because it is our teachings and our beliefs and our spiritual focus that give us our character and that give us our mission here on earth. And so I think there is a real danger of our losing our spiritual focus if we become too engaged with the community service and forget that we're a church. And this, I believe, is where the concept of the Trinity, the three that's in everything, can help us not to have that happen. Because yes, it is important to express in action what we believe, but let's not forget that our actions are an expression not only of our beliefs, but of our core loves. And if you lose the love, and if you lose the beliefs that give us distinction and direction. Where are we? We're now again a partial church. We can be a partial church by focusing too much on the teachings and by only doing doctrine and only doing Bible study. But we can also lose our identity and become partial by only serving and not thinking about why we're serving and what are the principles of our service and what are the deep beliefs that we come from. And so I believe that it's not an either-or proposition, at least not from a Swedenborgian perspective, that if we're able to continually keep in mind that we're supposed to be a complete church, we're supposed to have the deep love for God and the neighbor, we're supposed to have the clear teachings clearly in our mind that give direction and specificity to our actions, and we are supposed to also express those, not just in words, I now think, but also in practical service to others as a body, then I believe we don't have to fall into the trap, the one that we have fallen into, focusing primarily on the truth side, the one that we could fall into, becoming a social service agency instead of a church. I believe that if we can keep that Trinity in the church in mind, we can keep our spiritual focus and show others what our church is, not only by what we say, but also by what we do. Floor is yours. Yes, Hunter.
Well, first, I just want to thank you for raising this. I think it's really important, and you're certainly speaking to something that's very dear to my heart, and in fact, it is that marriage of good and truth in action as a teaching that was one of the first things that drew me to this church and this theology. Having said that, I want to point out that the concern about polarizing is actually a very interesting one, because in actuality, if we look at the churches that are growing and the churches that aren't growing, the timid churches that are afraid of polarizing are the ones that are actually losing membership. And the churches that are taking very strong stands, both the ones we agree with and the ones we disagree with, are the ones that are growing. I mean, if we look at Glide Memorial Church in San Francisco, if we look at Riverside Church in New York as urban churches, if we look at a great many of the right-wing evangelical churches, they have no concern about polarizing. And they're growing like wildfire. So that would not be of concern to me. I'm thinking about the prophets. I'm thinking about, you know, I agree with you that it's not our role as churches to be involved in politics, but I do believe in the prophetic pulpit. I strongly believe in the prophetic pulpit, and I do believe that it is our role to use our prophetic voice when we see evil in the world, when we have a vision of good for the world, and to speak that. And that has political implications. We may not get involved in party politics, and indeed, legally, we can't. I mean, that's simply, it's illegal for churches to do that.
If you're a 501c3.
Okay, I'm...
If you're not, it's not anywhere
really?
Near as clear.
Okay, all
but
right.
But that's one of the ways you come under government regulation
okay.
when you become a 501c3. You agree not to engage in certain things.
Okay,
and
all
therefore
right.
you lose freedoms that you would have had if you hadn't taken that step.
Okay, all right. I thought all churches were automatically categorized as that, so I stand corrected. Nevertheless,
it's a bit fuzzy.
Yeah.
That's generally the case.
I do think that we have a moral obligation to speak out morally, and I think that just as the prophets of old did, that is right now, it's incumbent upon us to do that, and that does have political implications, but I think that if we're not doing that, then we're not comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, which I think is the role of a church. The only other thing I want to say here, and then I'll relinquish the microphone, is I went to a conference last month in Berkeley on spiritual activism, and I was very excited to see, I believe 1,500 people showed up because they were feeling very strongly about these issues and feeling that it was time for people who have a progressive worldview and are spiritual and come from a spiritual base to actually claim the moral banner. And there will be a second conference in Washington, D.C., I think in January or February, that I'm planning on attending, and I would love it if some other Swedenborgians would be interested in attending with me. If you're interested, it's at tikkun.org.
I have two brief comments before turning it over. One is that I agree that we need to have a prophetic voice and speak out, and that that has political implications to it. The other is that I think it's good for us to look at what the evangelical churches are doing, but I don't necessarily believe that just because they're growing, that means that they are right in everything they're doing. I have great concerns about the political involvement of many of the evangelicals, and they're losing their focus as a church and becoming worldly powers instead of spiritual powers. I think Dean had his hand up next. And then Roy, and then George.
Thanks, Lee.
Oh, and then Laura.
I just wanted to, I was reflecting on your thing about the our church doing its truth. My home church was in Portland, Maine, down here. And in Portland, we've always had a child care facility in the same building. So we were always part of the community. And then when 6 years ago, we moved to Temenos in Westchester, we heard from a lot of the people in our church and some of the neighbors that we were a cult. And I think that I'm just commenting that sometimes when you focus too much on your truths without some of your heart, you can get, you know, considered. We have to be careful about that. Mm-hmm. And as Temenos became more and more part of the community, doing stuff, yoga and music and stuff like that, people began to realize, oh, you know, there's other things besides the truth, the stuff that we're doing, and we have to guard against that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Roy.
I think when we, if you have read the Acts of the Apostles, the diaconate was formed to take bread and food to the widows and to visit people in prisons. Christ our Lord said, as much as you have done it unto the least, you've done it unto me. A couple summers ago, when Sage Curry was in Detroit, I took her and Renee Billings on a tour of Detroit. And one of the buildings that we visited was a very fine Gothic building, built in 1911 in sort of the inner city. And at present, it's being used for something called Crossroads. The church part has been divided, this beautiful Gothic. The upper story is like dormitories for the homeless. They provide clothing and like blue jeans that are given by people, and not golf clothes. They don't give golf clothes. These people need something to go to work in. And this is all of the denominations collect the food, the Lutherans, the Catholics, all of them together. They keep a file of the names of, you know, people so that they know they're not being ripped off. You know, you go to the Presbyterians and they give you $100 and you go to the next one. So these works of mercy are beyond the denominational beliefs, and they're still doing the work of Christ. And even if you're a little tiny church, I believe that the Swedenborgian Church in Royal Oak does give to this thing, and it provides useful, you know, ways to help people.
And despite our tendency as a church to focus on the teachings, looking back in the history of many of our churches, there was a lady sewing circle that made quilts and blankets and hats and gave them to the poor and underprivileged. And so the church has, in fact, historically been engaged in a certain amount of charitable action. George.
Yeah, several things. Now, Lynn Neighborhood House was a major social action venture in the Boston area just crossed my mind. With you 99% of the way, I'd be very careful, though, about drawing a contrast between spiritual and practical. Spirit is the spiritual world, if it is, in fact, the world of causes. Working with causes can be not get the immediate visible results of giving somebody food, but it is immensely practical. But on the question of polarization, Eric Hoffer wrote The True Believer, and one of the sentences in that has stuck with me. He said, a mass movement can do without a God, but it can't do without a devil. You've got to demonize something. Mm-hmm. And the tendency, the rules of the political game are that there is no virtue to the opposition. You do not find politicians standing up and saying, hey, those Republicans had one good idea here. You do not find people on either side at this point saying, hey, Saddam Hussein did some good things. Mm-hmm. He built schools. He kept electricity and water flowing. He did all sorts of things. You can't do that in the political game. And it occurred to me that if the church does have a mission in the political arena, it might be precisely to say polarization inevitably falsifies things, mm-hmm. because it demonizes. And when Christ said, love your enemies, he was saying, look for the good, or otherwise you're distorting the picture. You're not living in the real world.
Thank you. You would notice if you looked at my notes that spiritual is most often in quotes as what we think is spiritual.
But I'm sorry, I wasn't listening that.
What we think of as spiritual, but I agree, the spiritual becomes more practical than anything else if it's truly spiritual. Thank you, Laura.
Couple things. One is we have some pretty close friends who are in sort of the big church in our area. And one of the things that I think that you don't see from the outside is it seems like people work their way into the inner circle and then they get mad and quit and form another group. But the group is so big that if you didn't know that, you wouldn't know. So I think there's a sort of rotating thing going on in any large organization where, you know, there are splits. I mean, mm-hmm. this church every 2 or 3 years, I mean, they're always huge, they're always growing, they're always building. But every 2 or 3 years, there's a new little church that appears in the area that it's a group that's a split off because they had an argument in the inner circle and, you know, just the kind of thing that we know all about. Mm-hmm. The other thing is I had a very similar upbringing to Lee's. And one of the things that I really, you know, love about our church is, yes, we're all called to uses, and we're all called to our own individual way of doing that. And I think that any time, you know, we want to get into these projects, we need to do kind of what you showed us a model of, is one person in a group says, I would love to do this, and who wants to join me? And without the other side of saying, this is a good thing, everybody should do it, or what's wrong with them because they don't do it, because then we're in trouble. Yeah. Anytime we are looking and saying, why is this person on the outside, that's not, you know, following some of the wonderful things about our doctrines that say we're all individuals. We were doing things about work in class yesterday with the older Sparks, and I was telling them a story that Harold told me. He came home and he had this patient, this very active man, and his job is he works on a trash truck. He loves his job. He loves to be outside in any kind of weather. He loves physical activity, swinging along on the back of the truck, using his muscles, and he loves to see that slice of everybody's life of what they throw out. You know, if you took this guy and asked him to be inside a building, you know, whether it was doing any kind of charity work, he wouldn't like it. Because he doesn't want to be confined, he wants to be outside. But if you gave him a job hefting stuff around and being involved in somebody's, you know, devastation of their house from a flood or something, he would love it. Mm-hmm. You know, so he would be somebody that could very easily be, oh, well, he won't do this. So that's just sort of my thought about this. I love to see people picking their own cause and seeing who wants to join me.
Thank you. I will say that when we did the supply sacks and some of the other earlier ones, it did go in front of the church committee, and the church committee said, yes, let's do this. But not everybody had to be involved if they didn't want to be. It's a little tricky because if your church takes particular political action, everybody in the church is sort of painted with that brush. If it's known in the town as or the community as this church stands for X. You know, this is the pro-gay church. Everybody in the church has to speak to people in the community about that, whether they agree it or not, or it has to be hanging over them. Social action, there's a certain amount of truth to that too, and there may be some projects somebody really doesn't agree with, but I think it doesn't have quite the level of you have to be involved in this whether you want to or not, if it's a service project and if it's a political action. Trevor?
Two things. One is that I've noticed that in our church particular, every time we do a church survey, most of the issues are split right down the middle in our church. So that is one good reason we should be worried about polarizing, is because we really don't want to alienate half or 40% of our membership. Another thing is that, yes, the churches that are politically active are the fastest growing churches, but the fastest growing churches are also the churches that do the most outreach into the community. They're the ones that have the most programs, the ones that do the church suppers, and the ones that are out in the community doing things. So it's really not one or the other.
Thank you. Other thoughts, comments, questions, opinions? Well, I'm not going to keep talking if you don't want to. Thank you.